Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Anthony had a great week of practice. You can see his natural ability in the games. It's his show now. You know, it's time for him to go. It was his show last year, so it's his show now.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gassers, and I'm with Boomer.
Well, folks, if you were homeschooling and ever wanted to teach your kids what a Pyrrhic victory was, this last weekend's game versus Northern Illinois would be a fine example to...
Always good for the hot take. All right, thanks, Boomer. Rob?
I mean, I don't really have much of a hot take. I had to take all of
the hot take.
Furry... I had to take all of my furry clothing down to the dry cleaner today after... all the shit that got thrown my way from Twitter. So
that was a good video.
If you haven't seen the video yet, Dave, what it is Travis Hunter did a video talking about the hit and basically how he forgives the CSU player for the hit. And, you know, basically, you know, he's glad the doctors were out there because they stopped him from playing because he wanted to go back out. But while he's doing the video, it looks like he's in like a 5-year-old girl's bedroom with like giraffe pajamas on with like a hood over his thing.
It's true.
So I was home alone this morning and had a couple cups of coffee and I put on my tortilla blanket that has a hood and like some unicorn headphones because he was wearing headphones. I put on some like unicorn headphones.
Longest hot take ever.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry. And anyway, I made a video and I posted it on Twitter today, and I'm sure you can find it later if you want to, Dave.
Okay, well, I have that to look forward to, I think. it's on X, actually, right, Rob? Twitter doesn't
I'm
exist
sorry.
Any longer?
Yeah, I would refuse to call it X.
We don't even know if X is going to exist.
I don't even refer. The only time I ever refer to my ex is when I talk about how I felt after the CU game and that I would rather be married to her than feel the way I felt.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's Elon Musk for you. All right. Last but not least, Honky, what do you got?
I think I forgot it by this point. I don't know.
I know.
I always say, you know, what Redcast Nation has grown to 27,000 and we're almost at 28,000 now. But I want to give a special congrats out to Husk guys. They hit 50,000 today on X by itself. They also are over 100,000 total with all their different sites that they have. So congratulations to Husk guys. They're very good dudes. And they just sent me a bunch of pipeline jerky stuff. We have a pipeline jerky logo now on the Redcast mic. And so nice. Very good guys over there, Dave and the group.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, you know, Redcast Nation knows that we like to do these shows after victories. We don't get to do it that often, it feels like, but Honkies likes to do shows after victories so often. I think this is his third day in a row of doing the show.
Yeah, this is going to be kind of a new thing. We kind of got our schedule figured out. It takes a couple weeks sometimes for us, but I've been tending to try to do a thing on Sundays, morning after the game. I've just done it by myself here, and it's like my 4 or 5 takes. And then Mac has been getting really interested in doing these math rules, and we've been doing them on Monday nights. So we're going to do those at 9 o'clock on Monday nights. And then this works out for everyone here on Tuesday nights at 8:30. So I think this is going to be kind of the regular schedule for at least the season. And so you'll be getting hit up with a bunch of Redcast stuff here, Redcasters.
Awesome. Illinois week's going to throw you all off kilter, though. It's the Friday night game.
That probably will. We'll do a rapid reaction after the win. So it's all
right. That's right. Well, Honky, it was a much more enjoyable Saturday evening with a 35-11 victory over the Huskies of Northern Illinois in a game where the defense completely dominated and the offense looked a little bit better under the direction of Henrik Harburg. And we'll get into breaking down the offense and defense a little bit, but let's start with some tweets of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. The big news that came out of this week, there are two things, the quarterback and the running backs. And so you're going to see that hit hard here on the tweets of the week. We'll start on the first page here and let's talk about it as a group, but a post that we had and then one from Johnny GBR. We had quarterback controversy ? Nah. We love what Harbaugh did tonight. We also know that we'll most likely need both him and Sims to win games this year. Here's the good news. It feels like we might just have two quarterbacks who can win games now. Just keep improving and take care of the football. And Johnny GBR said, kind of feels like we're already drawing battle lines between Harburg and Sims. The reality is both need development and neither should be crowned or written off. We're three games in. We already needed both. That's not going away, especially given Rule's offensive philosophy. So thought maybe we just chat about that a little bit. But Dave, I mean, quarterback wise, what did you think coming out of the first week or this third week, first week of Harburg?
Yeah, it kind of feels like week one, though, right? The first two were just kind of like, both of those tweets were from Sunday, which is interesting, mm-hmm. right? In the sense that you mm-hmm. guys are kind of addressing that QB controversy as probably the topic du jour, you know, but it quickly kind of faded into the background after Monday's Matt Rhule press conference because of the next tweets probably, which is the running back. But I just think you can't have those conversations separate, right? Because this conversation of mm-hmm. Sims and Harburg and who needs to start or who doesn't start is it does change a little bit when I think we have a pretty clear understanding that they're going to have to run this quarterback, whoever is out there, as much as they are right now, almost mm-hmm. to continue to generate some big plays, right? I do think you're going to try to find other ways to get explosive plays and to not just hand the ball off to Anthony Grant the entire time. But reality is I think I heard on the radio today, Unsportsmanlike Conduct did the numbers. We're averaging 17 quarterback carries a game right now, which is just behind the Jamal Lord era, you know, counts, right? So we're pretty high. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look like it's probably going to go down that much. We also heard from Satterfield today that we need to throw the ball more, which I don't necessarily disagree with. I just think it's really more, we just need to run more plays, right, Honky? I mean, like, I was mm-hmm. doing the math. We were only averaging 62 or 3 plays a game right now, and I think we just need more offensive snaps.
Yeah, here's one of the tweets. It's from Jim in Minnesota, and it hits exactly on what you were just saying there, Dave, that this is from Coach Rhule. He said, we are option zone option team. Like, we're going to do that, run the QB. It's part of the offense, so I don't care who the leading rusher is. We're going to run all those guys. And Jim said, I think this is the first time I've heard Rhule identify what we're trying to do on offense. And I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that this may not be the type of offense that we run in year two or year three. We may not always be so quarterback centric, but yeah. At least in year one here, they made a point when they brought Sims in to begin with, they made a point that that's what they want to do. And your other point that you made there, Satterfield today, this just goes back to, I think a lot of people are real quick to just write Sims off. And Satterfield made a point here. He said that Jeff Sims was more active at practice today than at any point since he got hurt at Colorado. Sims took 50 to 55% of the reps today at practice, according to Satterfield. I guess I'll go to Boomer here for a second. I mean, does that bother you? Are you okay with Sims getting 50, 55% of them? Were you thinking that his season was over, or were you expecting him to get right back into it?
I imagine they were at least going to get him right back into it, give him another shot at it. If only because if he's still their number one guy, and I think he was going into the season, and it's hard to say he shouldn't be only after two games, that if he's going to come back, you don't want to have him come back against Michigan to be his comeback game. So I think mm-hmm. you would try to get him ready here for Louisiana Tech just to at least get him even just part of the game, you know, just back into the rhythm, see if he can hold on to the ball, you know, see how healthy his ankle is, and see what he can do. So I guess from that perspective, if you do plan to go with Sims long-term, or at least in the medium term here, yeah, it does make sense trying to get him back for this week. So, and Dave, I looked it up while you were in regards to your question. Nebraska's averaging 64.3 offensive plays per game. That's ranked 103rd in college football right now. So, yeah, they really aren't getting a whole lot of offensive plays. It ties them with the likes of Eastern Carolina, and just slightly above Rice. So,
yeah. And statistically, there, like to Satterfield's point, I think he said we're only averaging 21.5 attempts a game, which actually Harburg threw 24. So that's more about what I kind of expected, about 25 or so a game. But that's only above the service academies. Like, everybody else in the country is throwing more, but we're just not running that many plays either, right? So it's mm-hmm. a combination, I think, of things here that's causing some of these comments, right? We just need a more efficient offense that stays out in the field longer and converts, you know, yards into points.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know me, I'm a run the damn ball guy. And I don't want to get back into too many Danny Langsdorf moments of where we need balance. I don't necessarily believe Honky, that. Yo.
Yeah, let me just Boomer kind of mentioned that scenario, and this is one way I've been thinking about it. Maybe Rob, you can comment on this too, but like, what's your ideal scenario on how this quarterback situation plays out in the sense of like Sims has two data points and they're on the road versus Power Five teams in hostile environments. Some people say the Colorado environment was the most hostile they've seen in, you know, 30 years or whatever. I don't know if that was the case, but some people have said that. And then Harburg has one data point at home against a G5 team that had just lost to an FCS team and clearly didn't have a great offense against what seems like to me is a pretty good Nebraska defense. And so the point of like, if Sims isn't 100% healthy, Harburg starts again, and then where are you at with Michigan? Because then you could potentially run Sims back out there at Michigan and he's 100% healthy, but he gets Michigan, right? Which seems a little unfair. Harburg just has a two-game data set in both versus G5s that he looks great in, and then you just run Sims back out there against the first Power Five we can find, and they happen to be the number two team in the country. Or you start Sims this week, but he's not completely healthy. That's not exactly what you want to do, probably, right? You know, maybe the ideal scenario is that, you know, Sims is healthy enough that he gets a fair amount of reps in, but Harburg also gets several drives in early in this game and both get to play some. So you have a comfortable, you know, feeling about both of them playing against Michigan and whoever you kind of best man wins. But it's just there's no easy way to bring Sims back in here if he's not healthy this week, because then you're potentially bringing him back against Michigan. It just feels unfair to the guy.
Well, that's a lot to process, Dave. I mean, there's so back to your point about the running and not getting as many plays, etc. One of the things with this new running clock as well is that, like,
yeah,
on first downs, is that I think we ran the ball somewhere close to 50 times in this last game, right? It was almost like 60, almost 70% of the time we ran the ball in this last game, I think, something like that. I think we ran it, what, 46 or 48 times or something by the time the game was over.
What Boomer.
And so that being said, I mean, the clock's running the entire time that we have the ball for the most part outside of, you know, drop passes here and there running out. So I'm not too concerned about the number of plays. I am concerned about the ball control and holding onto the ball, especially in a game like against Colorado and against Minnesota. I mean, you look at the stats there and the time of possession for us was about 50-50 against both those teams. So that being said, had we not turned the ball over as much, I mean, it could have easily been like 60-40 or 65-35, like in that mm-hmm. term. So, and we are, and it's already been said, and I know I could probably find tape on it somewhere from Rule that this is a ball control offense. They're going to hold on to the ball. They're going to pound the ball. That's what they're planning to do. They have been using the fullback, you know, so I guess to answer your question about Sims and Harburg, honestly, I mean, Heinrich just looks, it was just a completely different look that this team had compared to the first 2 weeks. And I know because I was at both games, watched them both very closely, and it just felt different out there. The flow of the offense felt different. The zing on the passes were, to me, a lot more accurate. Now, there was the one turnover. Okay, fine. That was probably some jitters. But after that turnover, and after the first half, the offense just came out and they found what needed to be done and it just clicked. And I feel like that offense could be run against any team in the nation at this point, because it's all about ball control and running. And, you know, when we got out there and we did exactly what we planned to do, maybe this is going to be a situation where Heinrich is the starter. Hopefully, in my opinion, hopefully Heinrich is the starter. And then if we get a good enough lead or we start wanting to bring Sims in for plays here and there and get him some confidence and maybe get him some yards, and that would be ideal to me. But if he's not 100%, there's no reason he should be out there starting the game, because Heinrich is.
So Rob, just to clarify, you want Harburg to be the starter this week or just in general?
This week, and you know what? Let him keep going. I mean, against Michigan, it's going to be a much friendlier environment. Yeah, gotcha. I'm Camp Harburg.
I got you, Honky. I'll let you.
You know, I guess I think Harburg earned the start, another start. He didn't have jitters on that hit. He got blindsided. I mean, that's what caused that fumble. But that was at least a legit turnover after we've had so many countless
It was forced, to your point, Honky.
Yeah, it was forced versus unforced. You know, what I'd like to see is I'd like to see Harbaugh now get into some pressure situations. That's something we really didn't see. That goes back to your point, Dave, about playing at Colorado and what that environment was like, or playing even at Minnesota and playing on national TV, Fox, you know, both times. All that, you know, adds to the pressure. Now we talk about data points with Sims. He's two here, but he's really two plus because he's had multiple seasons prior to here, and mm-hmm. he has stacked enough turnovers, you know, on top. I still, having said all that, I'm Harbaugh or Harbaugh right now with stardom this week. He deserved it from last week. I think he's earned it. I want to see another game out of him. But I just know that we're going to need Sims. We're going to need both of them. And even if Harbaugh just takes off and is an absolute stud and runs with this position and never gives it back, we still probably going to need Sims out there. And really, one of the reasons is because of what happened this week. And with the running back situation here, and here's tweets of the week with Sean Callahan and Sam McEwen. Callahan reported yesterday running backs Gabe Irvin Jr. and Ramir Johnson. They're both out for the season. They suffered injuries. Irvin had a hip and Ramir Johnson had a shoulder. And then Sam McEwen said, for context, Anthony Grant accounted for 70% of in-use running back carries in 2022. So the situation, while difficult, will not be new to Grant or any of his teammates. Grant is an elite athlete. And that gets us into the running back spot, but it still hits on the quarterback, Dave, because I think Sims can be a part of that running game, whether he's lining up mm-hmm. at quarterback or not. We've already seen Harbaugh. The first way they got him on the field this year was lined up as a receiver. Why would we think this staff would do anything different? If Harbaugh's quarterback, but Sims is this great athlete, I think they'll find a way to get Sims on the field too. They're going to have to get creative.
I mean, I think it's creativity. I guess I can't jump to the idea that one of those two is going to be lining up as a running back, I guess. But the idea of I mean, just to the point of we need explosive plays at some point in this offense a little bit, right? I love the ball control, but occasionally you just want to, you know, get some chunk yardage there. Having both of them out there, sending somebody in motion, doing those type of things. We already used one trick play to score a touchdown versus Minnesota. There might be games where I think this defense is going to keep us in a lot of games. And if we get a junk touchdown again somewhere and we beat Michigan State or Maryland or whatever because of, a halfback toss thing where Harburg's the one running out there and then throwing out deep to Billy Kemp or whatever, I don't care, right? Let's take a win where we can find it. And I think that's where that creativity is going to come into play a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Wait, here's some of that creativity too, Dave, it was Billy Kemp out there. You know, if Nebraska needs Billy Kemp to run the ball, he said he's ready, whatever is needed. And we'll show when we get to the offensive segment, we have a play, actually the touchdown throw to him in the first drive where he's lined up in the backfield. So it's not impossible, almost like Wandell kind of like, again, it's not that it's ideal, but it's not ideal losing your first and second string running back in the same week either. And so when you do lose people, you got to find ways to make it work around them. And so Sims, if he's not the starting quarterback, I also think he's too dynamic of a offensive talent to just keep on the sideline because Harbaugh is doing such a good job at quarterback and isn't giving up the spot. I mean, they've got to find a way, I think, to get Sims onto the field just from a talent perspective. And again, I'm not going out of the offense by saying that. They showed that with Harbaugh the same way in week one. You know, when everyone was like, Harbaugh, he's not going to line up at receiver and catch passes, caught a pass in the first game. So I think those guys are really dynamic talents, and they're going to try to find ways to use both at some point in some ways.
Let me throw out something that I think a little red meat for you, Honk, is in the sense of like it feels like this is a situation where you could potentially see at least a few more fullback carries just to disperse the load and not have Anthony Grant take so many of those, especially up the middle, you know, where we're just looking to get a couple of yards, right? You know, take the pressure off mm-hmm. of him in the wear and tear and let him be the guy that is getting the ball more in space. With that said, I was looking at the backup running backs right now. We have Emmett Johnson, redshirt mm-hmm. freshman, and then was it Quentin Ives? I'm not quite sure.
Quentin Ives.
And it's like Quentin's like, he's like 6'2", 190 or something like that. Very young though, and we'll grow into that and add some weight, right? You know, Gabe Irvin probably plays at what, 215 or 210. Mm-hmm. I was looking at Janarian Bonner as our fullback. He's 6'2", 220. I'm like, well, that sounds like a guy that could line up at tailback if you needed to and run up the middle for a few yards too, right? Well, you know, not only from the fullback position, but and he's not even as big as Yant, right? But, I mean, I don't know why Bonner, who's clearly an athlete because he's moved around a lot already and is playing a bunch of different things and can go in motion, et cetera. I think you could sneak a few carries out of him. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I mean, from a run-pass ratio, let's just say if we're going to have 70 plays in a game, which is probably aspirational right now, we haven't really hit that number. Yeah. But if 70 was a good number, I would love it to be 45 rushes, 25 passes, let's just say on an average day. So let's break that down. How do you get to 45 rushes? Let's say that Grant can be a 20 carry a guy game, a play, you know, 20 carries a game. Well, what's our quarterback's been doing? You said it earlier, they've averaged about 17. Now some of that's been sack adjusted, but let's just say they're somewhere in that 15 to 20 range. Now you're somewhere between 35 to 40, and you're trying to come up with about another 10 carries. You've got fullbacks. They've done reverses to Hill. They've done a reverse to Lloyd so far. You know, Kemp can be lined up in the backfield. You can do some things with Sims and Harburg. Got to get his name down. I keep saying Harbaugh. Anyways, you can do some things where you have both of them on the field. And what you're doing is you're trying to build up those numbers. And then, oh, by the way, I didn't even mention Emmett Johnson and Ives there. So maybe, you know, maybe Grant isn't getting 20. Maybe he's getting 15 and you're getting another five or six out of those backups. And Lubin was out there too this last week, the walk-on from Wahoo. So, I mean, that's how you would build it up to 45. It's creative. It's not bell cow necessarily. This is not going to be Braylon Allen or, you know, Wisconsin Monty Bell giving it 35 times to one guy, but it's a way to break it down and still probably run the style of offense. I think Rule has said that he kind of wants to run this year.
I think something else you have to consider, which guys you rotate back there is, you know, with running backs, you're not just talking about carrying the ball. They've got to be able to block, you know, pass protect, you know, which guys are capable of doing that, you know, stepping up and running those sorts of plays too. So that's something else the coaches have to consider. And we have to think about when we talk about who we think can step up and play these roles.
That's a great point, Boomer. Yeah. I was really sad to see, for a number of reasons, and we all are, I was really sad to see Irvin and Ramir getting injured there. But I was really sad because, like, in the second half, there were some plays where Grant and Irvin were on the field in the same backfield at the same time. And I was like, oh, I've been wanting to see that for so long. I wanted to see it last year, you know, get two backs on the field at the same time. It just never would happen. And we're starting to find ways to get those guys out there. Now, this still can happen moving forward. It can be Emmett Johnson and Irvin on the field at the same – not Irvin, I'm sorry, Grant and Emmett Johnson. They could be on the field at the same time. But to your point, Boomer, you can't have a weak link there. One guy can't be someone that's struggling with pass block. And Dave, I think your selection of Bonner is a great one because he's kind of been our wild card from the beginning of the season, and he really hasn't played that big of a role. I'm shocked that we haven't seen more out of him, either from crack blocking or, you know, lead blocking or getting the ball on a handoff or a little pass out of the backfield.
Yeah, it seems like we actually have enough depth at that fullback position with Liebentritt and Lubin, is that right? To have Bonner be a running back as needed, right? You know?
So, yep. Absolutely. Yep. One more with Tweets of the Week on football here, and this was just some of the rankings. Our national ranks, we are 23rd in rushing offense right now, 209.8 yards a game. And on defense, we're fourth nationally in rushing yards, or yards per rush at 1.7 yards a rush. We're third in rushing defense overall at 46.3 yards a game, which is astounding. And then we're third in sacks at 4.6 a game. I hope we can continue to build on the success we had on offense against NIU. That was from Black Shirts. I guess I'll start with you again, Dave. What are your thoughts as you see those stats?
Yeah, I mean, especially on the defensive side, impressive. No questions asked there. I mean, this defense has exceeded all of our expectations from a performance, from a depth, from a dynamic, you know, run stuffing ability there. Those numbers speak to that. Obviously, not as quite as many turnovers as we want, but it does look really good. Now, obviously, it's only three games, and the competition is going to go up. But actually, that's going to be the case for pretty much every team in the country because we've already played two Power 5 teams. Most haven't, actually. I think, you know, these numbers are going to change over time. But I think hopefully we stay relatively highly ranked the rest of the year. It's impressive. And, you know, Boomer, looking at these numbers, 60 yards against Northern Illinois was given up on that last drive. So I can't imagine what these looked like if that wasn't the case.
Yeah, the defense certainly has, you know, like you said, Dave, exceeded expectations. I think everyone was a little concerned starting the season with the defensive line be able to hold up, you know, against run games. And what we've seen so far is, yes, they have. And granted, like you said earlier, Northern Illinois wasn't the most potent offense out there. I mean, they struggled with Southern Illinois, only managed 11 points against them. But yeah, that's what you want your defense to do. I mean, if they can shut people out, doesn't matter if they're good or bad, they're shutting them down. Colorado had a dynamic offense, and they were able to contain them for a decent chunk of the game, at least for at least a half. You know, and that, and Minnesota's, you know, not the Minnesota of old, but again, you're allowing the rushing yardage to be minimal. And, you know, if you can make a team one-dimensional, that's a great thing. You know, offensively, yeah, we're 23rd in rushing. You know, our passing numbers aren't great, and, you know, that kind of hurts the overall, you know, offensive statistics of the team. And that'll be interesting going forward, you know, especially if Satterfield wants to see more passing. You know, maybe we need more passing. I don't know. Or how we pass or who we throw to. We don't seem to have that dynamic, you know, Trey Palmer-esque, you know, just F it, throw it down the field for 50 yards whenever you want to. You know, we don't seem to have that yet. You know, maybe we're opening something up with tight ends more. You know, we saw Fedoni get open on a really nice play for a touchdown this week. You know, an excellent scheme on that. Maybe that's what we have to go to for this.
That's a good point, Boomer. And when we get to offense, I have a couple of plays that we'll show in the film breakdown. We're exactly to your point, without a Trey Palmer, just someone that just can get open by himself, we have to kind of find ways to get people open. And we're doing that. We're starting to do that in this offense. So I think we have a couple of plays that will kind of hit on that. But Rob.
Hey, Honky.
Oh, sorry.
I just wanted to throw it to the Rob really quick, because he's the Kool-Aid guy. And I thought, you know, with some conservative properties, you could look at how Northern Illinois only got 11 points and barely had 100 yards of offense against us for the majority of the game. But the Huskies beat Boston College by scoring 27, and Boston College almost beat Florida State. So, you know, I don't know what that actually means in Kool-Aid land, but it means obviously we probably could beat the Seminoles, right?
Well, and that's the other thing too, is that, I mean, we have to also look, like we're talking about sharing carries and our quarterbacks and number of throws and things like that. And we also got to take into consideration our opponent this week with Louisiana Tech, right? I mean, they're giving up over 200 yards a week in rushing and under 200 yards a week in passing right now, right? And so one of the things that our offense that we are going to obviously try to focus on is running the damn ball again. Right. And if they're giving up 205 to a bunch of, like, you know, lower level FBS schools like Texas Tech, you know, or I mean like Texas State. And I think they played a couple other teams that I'd have to go back and look at their schedule, but nobody of the likes of Nebraska yet. But at the same time, you know, we are battle tested against a couple of Power Five teams. And then last week we came out and we really flexed against Northern Illinois. And I think we're going to do the same this week against Louisiana Tech. And I'm not too concerned about the passing game, because if we keep the passing game very similar to what we kept it last week, then I think the team will just be fine. I think it will be, you know, we'll run the ball, we'll control the ball, we'll control the clock. We'll probably still come out and win by 21 plus points. And, you know, I'm not too worried about that. Their defense doesn't seem to be dominant. I mean, they've only got I think I saw something like 27 returning players on the Louisiana Tech team. I mean, I shouldn't talk about that because Colorado had like 85 new additions to the roster. But I will say this, is that there's one player that I was trying to see and I was like, oh, this will be great. Dakotas Crawford, right? Like he's going to be playing for Louisiana Tech this weekend. Like this is going to be great. And he hasn't had a single catch the entire year. So, but they
Boomer, do you know if Hank Backmeyer, the transfer who got dinged up last week for La Tech, is he going to play?
That I haven't heard. I'll do a little digging and see.
I think that's a big. I mean, they're going to try to throw the ball 50 times against us, and Backmeyer is a, you know, he's Boise State, pretty serviceable, highly recruited guy. Probably, you know, that'd be a bigger test for our
Well, it looks like his backup has had quite a few. His backup has had quite a few attempts already this season too. So I don't. That's a great question, Dave. Actually,
all right.
We're
gonna find out.
Well, the final tweet of the week, and we've been asked by so many different people, namely Dave. When I was down there in Boulder, my sister and her friend Jen, they were down there for some volleyball, and we don't talk a lot about volleyball on the show, mostly because we don't know much about it, but I do know that we are number two in the rankings this week. And so here's the tweet of the week from that our Huskers have been number two. Great win last Tuesday night on ESPN, the flagship network, against Stanford 3-1. And then they came around yesterday and beat another ranked team, Kentucky, at home. So just a feel-good thing right there. Great. You know, we are a women's sports program. We have been the last 6 years for sure. And led by volleyball. So they're number two in the country, and they are playing lights out.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, and that game, you know, had one of the best rallies back and forth that I'd personally ever seen. I mean, how long did that go? Well, if you haven't watched it, search it out on Twitter. It was crazy. Or video. What was it?
Something like 75 seconds.
Yeah, it was insane. Just the back and forth and the reflexes and the ability that, you know, both teams really showed in that was just awe-inspiring. That's kind of how we look if we, you know, knock a beer over how quick we can move. But
there's not a single senior on that team, and the freshmen are playing like they've been out there for the last 5 years. It's crazy. Like that. There was one save that Lexi Rodriguez had where like it looked like Kentucky was just going to kill it right there. Like you thought the play was over, and somehow she got under it. And then right after that, like the next save on that save really was almost just as incredible as hers, but just wow. Like,
yeah,
these women are balling. Like, I don't know how else to put it, but they are balling. It is fun to watch. I'm sitting there,
breakdown right there that we're all looking for. Rob really yeah. saying that they're
well, and it's great too. And I will say this, okay? I will say this. I was watching the game on TV the other day. My wife and daughters were out like shopping at Target or something. I was watching the game on TV, and my daughters come home and they said, "What are you watching?" I said, "Volleyball." They're like, "Why are you watching volleyball?" I was like, "It's fun to watch." And they both sat down, 7 and 4, both sat down with me and watched the entire final set. And we just sat there. And that's the longest I've ever gotten them to sit to watch anything with me that wasn't like Bluey or, you know, or A for Adley or one of those shows, right? So it was really cool for me. It was a cool experience because I got to sit there, watch the game without them complaining to change the channel because they were watching these, you know, women that are older than them, like play this sport where they were just kind of like, wow, that looks fun. And then they pretended like they were playing volleyball in the backyard later. And I was like, okay, this is cool. So
there you go. Yeah,
there you go. Very that's cool. That's what we're looking for.
And that, Dave, is the tweets of the week.
All right.
And now, scoring explosion, the offensive breakdown.
Well, I'm looking forward to the offensive part of the show, as in scoring explosion, where we break down all things Husker offense. And Honky, I think there's some video clips you want to walk through with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with the first play of the game. And it was an option out of the I formation 3-wide receiver set. So it's a triple option here, basically to the left. And before we even lined up, I was sitting with my cousin in the stands and I see the formation. And when you see the 3 wides out of that eye, I was just like, this is an option set. I didn't think we were going to necessarily run an option, but we did right out of it. But what I wanted to highlight here was the second receiver from the top is Kemp. And you see this blocking. If you're going to go back to the Ron Brown days in the 90s of running option football, Osmond would always say, if you're going to run option, you've got to have receivers blocking out there. And you see Kemp still going. So, yeah, we'll put this on loop here. But really focusing on him is him blocking that guy out to the left, taking him, you know, 10 yards. And that's what Harbor cuts off and comes under. Actually, we get a little bit better block, I think, out of the fullback there, which would have been Bonner. If we get a little bit better block out of that, then even the guy that was chasing him there. Yeah, yep, so right there, the fullback just misses there. That's the guy that ends up getting the tackle there. That play could have gone for easily another 5 yards or so without Harburg even getting touched there.
Yeah.
He would have made one move on that one guy. And he
I
had
got a, now, I was... got a question on that play, Honky. The running back all the way in the back there, like, isn't he supposed to be trailing a little bit closer though on that play for the pitch, just in the event that he pitches it? Or am I just not seeing that right?
The second that he cuts up, that Harbor cuts up, I mean, ideally, I think you'd like to see the runner mirror the quarterback a little closer. I used to do drills with quarterbacks where I would have them do
5 yards apart right there.
Well, this is fine.
Right there, it's okay. He needs to be turning up quicker
right here. Now is where he needs to turn up because now you got too much separation there. And look, he may want to pitch right now. Let's say he didn't have that guy dragging him. If he wanted to pitch and he doesn't have Ramirez there right at that point. So I used to do a drill with quarterbacks where I would have them zigzag and do weird, crazy zipper things around cones and stuff. And that running back had to follow him. It was on the running backs. It was their responsibility to follow the quarterback and maintain that proper distance. It's not on the quarterback's responsibility there. He's reading what's happening and cutting, respectively, and the running back needs to be there. And if you went back to the best days of the option, I thought the best option, the pure option runner that we ever had was Frost, because he was such a bad option runner at one point. He had to really learn it. He wasn't smooth and natural the way that Frazier was. And when he had to learn it, he got to the point where he would just pitch it, and he didn't even, you just assumed it. He didn't even look at where he was pitching. He just pitched it, and Amon Green or whoever it was better be there to get it. And in this play here, that specific play, I think that Ramirez kind of loses a little bit of that distance. But specifically, first play of the game, I just loved seeing the aggressiveness that Kemp was showing right away.
Honky, just for the fun of it, you could bring it up one more time, because maybe some of our listeners haven't watched as much triple option as you or I. But what do you think about Harburg's line here? Do you think he probably should have been a little flatter and not so deep on that, and actually been running? He seemed like he was a little indecisive on.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not as should have took a more direct route to the sideline, I guess.
Yeah, so he. It's this little right there. That slowed him down just enough. This isn't a real true triple option, because they clearly weren't going to hand that to the fullback. So this was more of a kind of a lead option there, I guess. But ideally, you'd like to see him just really burn it straight right now. He kind of turns and then he makes that one cut. Yeah. So that, I mean, that's getting real detailed down into but that's one extra step. It slows him down just a little bit. And maybe that's the difference between him being half a step ahead of that tackler there. And if the fullback gets a little bit better block there too, he's not even touching, and he's starting to pick up speed, and he's got one guy one-on-one. And if he has the trail guy right there, pitch it, and that trail guy could be going down this could be a touchdown
Amon Green run along the sideline,
I'm curious though too. It almost looked like he saw the fullback missing that block, so that's why he continued going outside. It almost looked like if the fullback had made that block,
he shouldn't have.
I'm just wondering.
You'd want to go out. I mean, the play's intended to go outside. That clearly where the running back's going. But so it was great to see that as the first play. I was excited to see that we came out right away and ran that play number one, and it got 6, 7, 8 yards there. And that's we'll take that. A little bit further, all three of these plays that we're going to show on offense are all on the first drive, a touchdown drive. The next one here is a play action. And so here we are. We're under center yet again, second play under center. And it's the completion that's thrown across the middle to Marcus Washington. And this gets back to what Boomer, you were talking earlier about Trey Palmer not necessarily having that one guy that's just going to get open by himself. Now look at this zone and look at
that rope too.
Yeah. And look at how wide open Washington is in the middle of this zone. Now, the point here isn't that, Washington's not Trey Palmer. He didn't get open because he just burned by somebody. This is opened up by the offense, by the scheme. So on this next loop, when you watch it, watch the linebackers here and watch the play action. Watch what all three of these linebacker guys all come up. They all bite on this, and you can see the second that they plant their foot in the ground and go, oh, crap, and start turning around. By that point, it's too late. Harburg throws a great throw on a rope right in between them all. But, I mean, that is the offense opening up the receiver into a wide-open zone.
So I was going to ask if he could have sold that handoff a little bit better. But after you pointed out those linebackers, it looks like he sold it perfectly.
So, yeah. Yeah, and this is the first snaps of Harburg playing. You know, I mean, these are his first drive as a starter. And so when you look at this is what they were scripting. This is what they were trying to, you know, they felt that he could do well. And they put it right away here in this first drive. And it's under center, it's option, it's running the ball, and then play actioning off of that run. In this case here, it's a play action right into the pocket, essentially. Good pocket, by the way. And let's see here, I'm counting numbers there. They have seven guys in that protection. It's play action with seven guys in protection. So you're not putting your quarterback into a real perilous situation.
Mm-hmm. Love play action. Very nice.
Yep. And the third play here, and this is the touchdown. And the first part of the focus is that we talked at the beginning about being creative. And Kemp is lined up here. Kemp catches the touchdown here. And look at the blocking downfield by Bullock, number one. So there's Bullock at the bottom leading it. So Kemp did a great job blocking on the option. Here's Bullock doing a great job here. But Kemp is lined up in the backfield. So this is very Wandale Robinson-like. You can find ways where they could hand the ball off to him and everything. They throw the pass out to him. He catches it. He's about 3 yards downfield, cuts up. Now, the other block that he gets up there is from Fedoni. Now, the next time that we watch the loop, you watch Fedoni here, and there's a danger of this could actually probably be an offensive pass interference or maybe a pick.
Yeah, I was worried about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right here, since we're actually throwing the ball. Since we're throwing the ball, I don't know if this is supposed to be thrown across the line of scrimmage. I don't know if Kemp should have come more right along the line of scrimmage where you would be able to make that contact if you were Fedoni. But if you're going downfield, you got to be real careful to make sure if you're number 24, not to be hitting that guy. And right there, he's hitting number one. That could easily be a pick.
He handed it off. Like, it almost looks like he was looking at the running back and thought maybe he handed it off and that's why he made the block, but I could be wrong. Like, because he's watching well, right no. here. He looks that's, and then he almost looks like, hey, the running back has the ball. I better block it. You know,
that's an RPO
type scenario, though.
That's an excellent point there, Rob. That could have been. And I think at the end of the day, it's probably on Kemp to stay at the line of scrimmage or behind, because to your point there, Rob, he may have handed that ball off and Fedoni needs to be blocking downfield. Right. So if that's a handoff, then Fedoni needs to be blocking that guy already. It's on the receiver there to make sure that
Kemp,
you're not down.
Let me be clear on this, Honky. If Kemp would catch that behind the line of scrimmage, Fedoni's block is legal.
Yeah. Yep. If you're behind the line of scrimmage, you can have guys downfield making contact. That's how you run screens.
Can't he make it up to 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, though? Isn't that it? Like, you can still make contact 5 yards.
All I'll say is that it gets into a close, hairy situation, and it seems more times than not we've had that stuff called on us. And you don't want to be going against Michigan, catch a touchdown, and have it called back because of a legal pick. We've had that happen before.
Yeah, they'll be looking at him.
Yeah, I mean, he was a boomer. Right at 5 yards when he made that hit. So,
Boomer, what do you think of Harburg's sidearm delivery? Like slinging Sammy Baugh out there or something, man?
Yeah, it's definitely noticeable. It's a little different. And I guess if it's working, great. Yeah.
You're 6'5, you can do that, but it might come back to haunt you at some point.
It could. That worried me a little bit too. You know, if you get a tall enough D line. You know, that could be some problems, but I guess I haven't measured the entire D-line in the Big Ten yet. But
in that case, it looked like he threw it around the defender right there, too, though. Mm-hmm. Like, he saw the defender coming multiple times, where
he really drops that arm.
Like, right here, the defender looks like he's ready to block the pass, and he drops the arm to the side and throws it around him instead. Like,
there was a play that was coming right at us where we were sitting, and I don't think we completed it, but he threw it. He did the same thing. It would look like a baseball throw, like a shortstop throwing it, and he threw it around a defender. A defender was in between the receiver and him, and he got it around him. Scary as hell. I mean, he got it around, and I don't think we caught it on that play. But it's a different way of throwing it. I don't know if you guys saw the video. It was the quarterback for, I think it's who played Baylor last week, like Long Island. The quarterback for Long Island had the craziest release I've ever seen. Like he literally threw it like Uncle Rico, just just whipped it, you know, like from his hip. It was crazy.
You can throw it over the mountains.
Well, yeah. And the thing is though too, is that like if we're watching, okay, and I'm not making this comparison, saying this only in that, you know, if we're watching the NFL and Patrick Mahomes makes that play, they're gonna replay it 100 times. Like, look at the athleticism on this guy, like being able to drop that elbow and throw it around the defender and make the completion for the touchdown. Nope, and oh my God, how that's so incredible. This is why this guy's so magical. You know, and here we
you're
are.
Right,
like,
you're right.
Henrik Harbert, well, we're questioning it. And I get what you guys are saying. I see that happen, and I think, like, wow, that's like, to me, that's like getting creative. He sees the defender in front of him. He knows that the guy's like, you know, 6'4", whatever, could probably jump up and block, knock down the pass where he needs to make it. So he drops the arm and throws it around him instead of over him where he might knock it down. Right. And so for me, I like it. That's where I like it. It feels like he's getting somewhat creative, and he made the completion. He made the touchdown. So I don't want to knock it. Is he going to miss some of those? Sure. But he's not going to complete every pass, even if it's over the top. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I mean, Vegas Jairs is like, if Rob just compared Harburg to Mahomes, and, you know, we've had these comparisons of Nebraska quarterbacks and Mahomes in the past. So we don't want to do that too often, but I mean, like, Mahomes, there's a few others.
It's just a sidearm pass is what I'm comparing it to, right?
Yeah, I'm saying, though, is that it's, I mean, in the long history of football, sidearm passers aren't always the most successful. That's all I'm saying, Rob. I'm statistically, you know, just saying that it's not always the safest bet, right? You know, especially if you're 6'5", and you're a drop-back passer, over the top, you're not going to get your balls knocked down very often, right? But look, I mean, it is what it is. He completes passes. I'm fine with it. It's just interesting. That's all.
Shorzy 69 says Harburg honestly reminds me of Eric Crouch. I hope he gets more chances. He's bigger than Eric Crouch, that's for sure. The one comparison that Harburg and Sims have together is just the size. I mean, those guys are both 6'4", 6'5", big running backs, big quarterbacks, and big running quarterbacks. And at 220, 225, they can lay the wood on some guys, and they've got some speed. Both of them have shown that in the first three games.
I was really hoping Shorzy got argumentative there so I could start like being like, hey, screw you, Shorzy. But I don't think anybody else here would get that joke. Like, because I don't think any of you actually watched that show.
No one got it, Rob.
Shorzy gets it, and that's why his name is Shorzy69, and I get it. And so, Shorzy, shout out to you.
It's time to throw the bones.
Let's throw the bones, where we talk all things defense. And breakdowns of plays here. Okay, I think you want to start one with your favorite player, Nash.
Well, I was going to ask you actually before I did that was
I don't know why it's keep on.
No, let me turn that off. I got it on loop. That's my bad. I was going to ask you, Dave, you know, who is and we already know the answer now, but who has been as impressive as any defender on, you know, in these first three games? Who has really risen above what maybe your expectations were coming into the season?
Above my expectation, well, the entire defensive line essentially, and we can start with Nash, but I mean, literally, the entire defensive line has played better than expected.
Yeah, here is, you know, Nash, and it's on a stunt, but the thing that Nash has just been so impressive from literally the first game, when Robinson was kicked out because of the targeting and then didn't play in the first half of Colorado. Nash has just been so disruptive. He's been so difficult to block. He's been in the backfield. He's been, you know, able to get sacks on guys.
And taking a lot of snaps too, right?
Taking a lot of snaps, the conditioning of him. So here you see him as a nose tackle, and then he does a little stunt around the right side, and this blocker against him has no shot. And Huttmacher just gets around the end there and just, you know, gobbles up a dude. Now, this is the first play of the game, and so this is a negative 2 yards. That's how Northern Illinois got off to a start. But, I mean, Huttmacher just absolutely dominates this play. I mean, he's still getting blocked as he's making the tackle.
Now, I heard that in the pronunciation guide, it shows that he should be named Huttmacher. And I'm like, really? I'll go with whatever he wants to be called by, but he could be the stunt maker here, right? Because it's a nice stunt play.
He could be the stunt maker. Now, the second play here.
Oh, Dave.
The second play here, similar. Now, this is right after the fumble that Harburg had when he got hit in the pocket. So talk about a quick transition defense. Defense is all of a sudden back on the field right at the five-yard line. And in the past, our defense, last five, 6 years, this is a touchdown. The other team comes on there right away, scores, and they get their 7 points. But the defense held three plays and forced a field goal. That was a huge deal. And on this first play, what was really impressive here, as much as anything, is the players. The guy at the bottom is Makai Bear, setting the edge. So you see him here. He gets 2-3 yards deep. There's no place for the running back to go. He has to stop, and he's going to cut up. Well, problem is, where he's cutting up, Riley Van Poppel, true freshman defensive tackle, number 74, I think, or 94. I think he's 94. He's right there. There's no place for the running back to cut up to. So we've got a redshirt freshman Bear setting the edge, and then we've got a true freshman defensive tackle right there, no place for that running back to cut into, and it ends up being another 2 yard loss. And you start thinking about like the depth that's being created. This is a big play. You know, this is first and goal on a quick change because of a turnover. They're at the 5 yard line. You would expect, you know, get all your starters out there. And no, we've got freshman guys out there, but they're making plays. So we're building depth, and these guys are doing a great job right there, right in the line of scrimmage, winning in the line of scrimmage.
Nash looks like the player I wanted him to be last year, but, you know, this year, and it's crazy. He has, like, more tackles or something this year. Like, he's supposed to be a guy that, like, what, eats up blockers, right? And it's like he already has, like, 11 tackles for loss this year or some crazy stat like that. He had 7 total last year. So, I mean, through 3 games, he's already got 11 tackles for loss, I think it is the stat that I saw the other day. And it's just like, you know, just that entire line moving, you watching all those guys stick to their assignments at the beginning of the play. Then they see the running back break into the left. So you can see all the linebackers drifting over, and they're right there on that tackle too. The gang tackling that entire team is doing right there. Like, that's something we weren't seeing over the last 5 or 6 years, right? Like, you'd see one or two guys there. The first guy would miss the tackle. The second guy would trip him up, and there'd be like a 2 or 3 yard gain maybe, right? Or a touchdown, like you said. But like, this just looks different. It's like the whole defense just swarming to the ball after sticking to their assignments there. Like, you can see it on the left-hand side of our line, watching the linebackers move up into that area on the left-hand side of the line while their line is trying to push us one way. We're actually controlling the line of scrimmage there, moving them all back a yard or two, right here. Like, you can just see them all moving back. You see the linebacker coming over. You see them all covered on the wide receivers. And then all of a sudden, you just see the rest of these guys the swarm. There's 4 guys on the ball. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys on the ball with 2 more right there on the back getting pushed in the back. It's like, when's the last time we saw Nebraska play?
Well, that's the thing. Like, setting the edge does you no good.
Every week, too.
Yeah, setting the edge does you no good if there's no one there to fill. If you're just setting the edge and the guy cuts up and has a wide open lane for 5 yards, then it's a touchdown. But there's no place for him to cut up here. And no one's getting, pushed off the block there. That's impressive. The players that are out there, again, we're talking some young dudes getting out there too. That's as much as anything. I'm just so impressed with what Tony White has done in a short period of time to get these guys to play like a full unit when they're going through 20, 22 different guys, I think, in the first quarter alone. Very impressive. The
amount of snaps some of these guys are getting is crazy, right? Yeah, it's really impressive.
Yeah. I'm going to actually, to go off of that, I'm going to switch around the next graphic or the next video. I'll go with the fourth one. And this is just to go off of the number of players. This is the sack that Jamari Butler had. And the reason I wanted to highlight this was because, again, this is a third and short early in the game. It's 7-3. These are important moments. You know, you want to have your best players out there, right? You want to have your starters.
Shoestring tackle right there.
The defensive line right now on this play on a third and short is Jamari Butler on the right, Raquan Buckley at nose tackle, and on the left is Princewell. That's a true freshman. It's a redshirt sophomore. And that's another redshirt sophomore. None of them starting. And that's your defensive line on third and four there when the game is 7-3 at the end of the first quarter. And we get a sack out of it. And the guy rushing in the bottom there, the jack, is Makai Bear. So there's a redshirt freshman.
Well, my favorite part is watching that.
Huge.
My favorite part, number four, I can't tell who that is, but watching number four kind of watch the play, see the quarterback drop back, and then like kind of make the break, kind of like, oh, you want to run? No, that's not going to happen. Like you see him right here, come over mm-hmm. the first down right here. He stops for a second, and then you just see him kind of taking the lane away right there. And it almost like allowed like for the sack. Yeah, and it almost allowed for the sack there because by the time that the quarterback realized that he wasn't going to be able to take that lane right there and break away, the offensive lineman had already lost that battle, and that was over, right? Like you can see him mm-hmm. right here, the lineman loses right there. Lineman lost him, and he can't hold him. You know what I mean? It's either a hold or a sack. So it's like 10 yards or 5 yards. You take your pick.
I want to see the alignment here on the next loop. I mean, we're a 3-3-5, but I'm counting five guys right there on the line of scrimmage at the beginning. And the tight end is getting held up by the top outside backer there.
Almost picked
And then Reimer looks like, I think Reimer is spying the quarterback on this, the way it looks.
Yeah.
He comes up and wasn't going to allow the quarterback to run up to the left. There's a little bit of a gap, a little bit of a hole
right there.
If he wanted to run, he could run, but Reimer was there to get him. Now Butler breaks off that block. He starts to go to make the tackle. If he doesn't make the tackle, Reimer is certainly chasing, but also I'm not sure who the other guy was, if that was Borders or whoever. Not Borders.
Sherman. Yeah. So, I mean, it just illustrates what the defense is doing, which is
they use the back judge for a pick too on that one too, because there was even if they had thrown to the tight end, the back judge was going to get taken out on that one. So that was a really good containment by the back judge as well.
Yeah. The last play I want to highlight here is one where Gifford comes up and makes the tackle on the quarterback and just darts through here and gets it. Now, first off, let's just look at alignment. So last play, we talked about how there was five guys on line scrimmage. Let's look at where the alignment is at the beginning of this. They have five guys up, and then there's two linebackers, essentially. Gifford, our rover, is one of those two backers.
Boom.
And he just darts in there, and he gets him from behind. Now, what I like about this play and what I highlighted on Twitter about it was that this is – think Michigan for a second. This is 7-on-7 inside the box football. They have – six blockers there along the line, plus they have a running back. So they have what should be seven blockers with the quarterback being the runner. So let me look at that one more time. Yes, they have the five linemen, they have the sixth, they have like a tight end, and then they have the running back. So they should have seven blockers against what we would have as seven players as well. So let's loop it and let's see what our defense is. We have five guys on the line, two backers. They're going to run it with the quarterback. If that running back can get to Gifford and lead block on him, they should at least have a hat for a hat on the ball. But the running back ends up getting nobody, and Gifford just shoots up. I mean, look how fast he came. This is the thing that caught my eye when I was watching it live, is how fast he darted through there. That running back didn't have a chance, and it's a sure tackle. That's the other thing that this defense has been doing. They don't miss tackles.
The patience there, too, though, also. I mean, okay, this is obviously slow motion, but I like the slow motion because you can see he pauses right here, pauses, and then, boom, sees that the quarterback's going to keep it and makes that break, right, where you said the running back had no chance. It's because the running back didn't even think he was going to make that break, but he stood there, he watched, he saw the quarterback keep it, and then he took the direct line there, right? So even if the running back had tried to make the block, right, the running back realizes, oh, God, that's my guy, he would have never made it there in the first place to get there because he's thinking he was going to be blocking somebody completely different, and then – you know, he makes that break in right here at the yard line to gain, right? He kind of pauses for a second and then realizes it and makes that break in right there. And it's great because that patience, instead of overcommitting and maybe running in thinking that maybe the linebacker was going to have the ball, he waits, sees that the quarterback's going to keep it, and then at that point, you know, makes the tackle, which is beautiful tackle, by the way.
And that there's Vegas Jr. said this is the play that Leonard got rolled up on. Yeah, geez, he did. One more loop of this. Watch the corner on top, our cornerback on the top of the screen right there on the 50. You know, I don't know if he makes this stop for a first down if Gifford doesn't get him, but that corner's coming right up too. I mean, that quarterback, despite the number game that they had in the box there, that quarterback didn't have a chance.
No.
Not with that corner coming up and not with the way that Gifford did. So those are just a couple of different examples. Defensively, we played a number of different people. We played some young guys. These were meaningful snaps. third and shorts and right after a quick turnaround on a turnover down in the red zone. And the tackling is sound. The guys are setting the edge. The guys are filling gaps. I mean, it's just really impressive to watch through three games. And so, you know, I don't ever want to look past an opponent. We're not good enough to do that. We need to beat Louisiana Tech. But after Louisiana Tech, I'm telling you, I am so jazzed to do this show next week and have Michigan coming into town, because we need – I feel like with our defense, we need to play Michigan. This is an opportunity. This is not a fear thing. We need to see how this defense is doing. All the things that we like, the effort, the tackling, mm-hmm. the aggressiveness, the physicalness, we need to see it against a Michigan type of team. And you know, who knows? I mean, Michigan could come out and run for 300 yards, right? They could. But I don't know. I like what I'm seeing defensively here, and I really think they're developing something that can defend against a lot of different styles of offense. So that 7-on-7 in the box one there, that was one to kind of focus on that. They wanted to run right up the middle and have numbers, and we still got to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think to kind of wrap this up, I think the key to some of that defense, because I think that's it's going to be a great test to see them against Michigan or ultimately – where, you know, I mean, a formerly Wisconsin team that would want to run the ball against us or Iowa, right? But it's also part of how well this offense can evolve to be complementary to that defense, right? Because I think if we can just simply hold onto the ball enough and get 21 points on the board, we can win some Big Ten games this year with this defense. But if we hang them out to drive with too many three and outs and you know, turn the ball over and giving the opponent short fields, et cetera, it may not look the same, right? So that's going to be the critical thing is complementary football. And you know, that race to six is still on.
I'm seeing Iowa fans, though, like on Twitter, after today, those rushing stats, right, got put out showing Nebraska is like the top 10 in rushing defense, right? And even Iowa fans on Twitter are like, hey, like Iowa fans, Hawkeye fans, if you're worried about Black Friday, this is the stat you need to be worried about the most, because this is, you know, that's their game, right? So it's like we've got other teams noticing, right? Our own opponents.
A long ways to go until Black Friday.
Yeah. But we're going to be not losing.
I think Dave's point, though, Dave's point about the turnovers, it's so critical. I mean, I people need to understand how close Northern Illinois could have been to being a much different game. You turn the ball over two or three times. Or when we did turn it over at the 5-yard line, the fact that we held them to a field goal instead of them just scoring a touchdown and making it 7-7. If Fedoni doesn't make that amazing third down catch right on the sideline when it's 14-3, there's so many moments in that game where we've seen past games that all it took is one or two things and it could have flipped on us. You have one bad special teams play and all of a sudden it's 14-10 or it's 14-14. And instead, this defense holds them to three. And the offense doesn't have any more turnovers, and then the defense just goes on to dominate. That's a clean game. That's a Big Ten West game, to Dave's point there. That's a type of game that's going to win a lot of games moving forward over the next nine. And I'm not eliminating anybody, Michigan included, from that list, but you've got to play that style of game.
Yep, absolutely. All right, guys, good stuff. I think I'm ready to watch this take on La Tech this Saturday afternoon. Yep. Do we want to talk a little college football in general with BetCast?
Go for it.
Let's do it with a little
the BetCast picks of the week. The BetCast picks of the week.
Looping. I gotta take it off the loop.
I don't know what's this looping thing, huh?
That's on me. I had to loop the plays, and then by looping the plays, it looped everything else that was.
Well, I always say like to repeat your point to make sure it comes across, and especially in radio, Dave, you should know
point
that.
Of emphasis
podcasting
here, so. To make sure that everyone Dave, knows our.
Repeat myself. Our
transition. Dave, I'm going to do it one more time so we have a good clean break.
The BetCast picks of the week.
Boom.
All right, guys, we have a great slate of games. It's awfully early in the week to get any. Get too definitive in our picks of the week, but let's just talk about some of the one of the best weeks you're going to get all year, I think. And right off the bat on Saturday morning, Florida State taking on Clemson in Death Valley. Clemson not ranked, even though I think they've actually played relatively well after their loss to Duke. In reality, if they didn't turn the ball over inside the 10-yard line, they probably are undefeated in the top five team or so. Florida State favored by 2 here. It's going up to 2.5. I'm already seeing that. I might grab that before it gets to 3. Any thoughts on Florida State, guys?
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. I mean, Florida State got a pretty big scare, you know, this last week against Boston College. Or if they hadn't, you know, had what, but approximately 87 penalties in that game, I mean, that Boston College could have easily won that game with what they had. So, yeah, this would be a great test for Clemson to see, are they able to work themselves back into winning the ACC, or is this kind of the start of the end of the Dabo Swinney era there? I think this would be the game that probably determines how the rest of this year goes for them. Yeah, because like you said, Dave, they've cleaned up those last two games, but they haven't played anybody in these last 2 weeks. It was, what, Charleston Southern, and then last week against FAU, where unfortunately Casey Thompson, you know, tore his ACL and was out for the season. So no good news there. But now this will be a fascinating. When was the last time Clemson was a home underdog? I wonder when that would have been.
Oh, sheesh. Been at least a decade, I guess, or more, right? You would think.
I would guess. Yeah, question. I couldn't even think of the last time it would be. So.
Yeah. Great comment here. Levi asked, did anyone see the South Alabama destroy Okie State last week, 33-7? Just a crazy game there. I cannot understand how Oklahoma State, who's using 3 quarterbacks right now, Honky. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you say if you have 2 quarterbacks, you don't have any. Well, they've got 3 right now, and one of them isn't Zane Flores yet, our Nebraska guy who might actually be their best option. So going to be boomer. That's got to be the ugliest game of the week, is Oklahoma State playing.
The over-under is 36.5 on that game, and the spread is actually Iowa State is favored by 3 or 3.5 right now. And that's crazy because Iowa State can't score more than 3 points a game. So I guess take the under and take the under and take, you know, Oklahoma State to cover. I don't know. Like is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know either on that one, because I don't really understand what Oklahoma State's doing. I mean, that just, I don't get that, you know. We've seen Alabama even struggle, you know, trying to rotate quarterbacks in and out. I don't know why Oklahoma State thinks they can get away with that. And they were just – their offense was just weird in that game for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. It just seemed so lackadaisical. They didn't have a whole lot of urgency, and they just I don't get them at all. So I wouldn't trust them with anything this season.
Kansas State also was playing multiple quarterbacks. They'd have a Wildcat guy go in there when they wanted to run it, and then they had their normal quarterback who was mobile enough too, but they were going through it. Since I mentioned K-State, Vegas Jerry here has K-State -6.5 with UCF.
So this is the Big 12 debut week, right? So all the new Big 12 teams have their first conference game. So this is UCF's first Big 12 game versus K-State. I think Vegas Jerry here is taking the Wildcats to bounce back. They had a heartbreaking loss there against Missouri. That was a really good game back and forth.
What a kick.
Amazing 61-yard field goal to win the game for Mizzou.
That kid just secured himself a NFL job, if anything, right?
Most likely. We were talking about Alabama there for a second. Alabama, Ole Miss. Ole Miss going into Tuscaloosa. Alabama only favored by a touchdown. Let me see if I can run off a few more of these.
They announced the starter for Alabama today. I can't keep up. Are they? Okay.
Yeah. It's no brainer, pretty much.
Is that Boomer's background where there's like a Xerox machine going off left and right?
I'm not printing anything at the moment, but I can double check.
Yeah, I think I think it's Boomer's.
He's probably still at the insurance agency or something like that, doing work today. So, yeah.
Always working, man.
Yeah. Also, Carol's okay, so
running some files.
Okay, focus, guys. Focus, Robert. Focus. All right, UCLA versus Utah in Salt Lake. Utah's favored by 4.5. You've got Colorado, an amazing survival game there against Colorado State. It's heartbroken for producer Skip and all the Rams fans. They're up 28-17. Honestly, should have been up by more than that. And just a stunning way to lose it. And yes, I think they probably should
I jinxed too. Them. I'm sorry.
I'll blame it on you, Rob. But now they go to Eugene, and Oregon is at least a 3-touchdown favorite already. So that's going to be intriguing.
And they don't have Hunter.
They do not have Hunter. That's correct. One of the best games of the week is actually the the two remaining Pac-12 teams, Oregon State going to Pullman to take on Wazoo. Oregon State favored by 3. Both of these teams ranked. I think there's 8 Pac-12 teams ranked right now, Boomer. That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean,
this for makes a no that, sense, right?
Yeah, they didn't want to be on and yeah, no one wanted anything to do with that conference, and they're all good. So I guess you're going to go out, you know, yeah, go out in style. Unlike the Big Ten West, who's decided we're going to just completely
no, we're not
crap the bed on the way out before we get rid of this division. So yeah, we're going to
speaking of the totally Big Ten West,
is the Big Ten West. So
Iowa somehow is still ranked 24th. Goes to Happy Valley to take on Penn State. Penn State favored by over 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, that'll be interesting after the, you know, late cover they had last week against Western Michigan to try to
yeah.
know, boost, you know, Brian Ferentz's chances of getting retained, going for that touchdown with about 30 seconds left already up on a team. They got that sneaky little cover that way. So a little bitter about that one, but that's all right.
I am too.
And, you know, that's kind of a big game really for the West, because if Iowa could somehow pull this off, you know, they've got a good game on a lot of people in, you know, the conference.
Or no way if you want to think of it. Nebraska still in the West. If Iowa loses that game, we want to keep on. Ohio State goes to South Bend and is a road favorite against the Fighting Irish. Just 3, but that should be a great game. And I think Notre Dame is going to give them all that they want to handle. All right, any other games out there, guys, that you're looking at? This is quite the slate.
I'm kind of going on some of the early games this week with, you know, I'm doing like, I've been kind of have this strategy as far as like how I'm doing my betting. Right. And like, I'm doing a kind of like,
you're not following just your gut, Rob.
No, I'm not actually. I've been picking basically on Thursday night and Friday night. I'll take, you know, 3 teams between the 2 nights. Obviously there's only 1 game on Thursday, taking 3 teams. And then I just pick them to do, like I'll do a 3-team parlay, but I'll also do the individual bets. And then I'll also do the full round robin on there as well, just for fun, kind of see how that goes on Friday night. And then that'll determine how I start doing my morning bets on Saturday morning games. And then
well, let's talk about Saturday a couple evening. Of the Friday games. Then,
well, Rob. The Purdue and Wisconsin's an interesting game. Purdue is supposed to be completely terrible this year. And, you know, that's what everyone at least was saying, but it should be interesting because I'm not that impressed with Wisconsin right now. And I think Wisconsin wins, but what are they, like a 2 touchdown favorite right now? Is that, oh no, it's only minus 6.
Where's it at? Where's the game at?
It's in West Lafayette. So
that's
the altitude can play a role.
The night games in West Lafayette have proven to be difficult for teams.
So
Wisconsin did not cover last week versus Georgia Southern. They were actually down, came back, won by I think 20, I believe, and the line was 20.5 or 21.
That was right. I also picked them to win, but you know, they did cover though.
And then we talked about that game, Rob. We actually told everyone to take that. Air Force is the other game I've got circled on Friday night, Rob.
San Jose State looked good against USC for a while, right? I mean, that'll be an interesting game.
San Jose. The line's moved to 3.5. It's not nearly as attractive as the 2 that it opened up as, but
no. Yeah. It should be an interesting one for sure. I actually, that was the one that I stayed away from. That's one of the games I stayed away from. I think I took Boise State over San Diego State. I just took the money line on that one because the 6.5 kind of scared me a little bit. And then the other, I took Wisconsin, to cover
with the 6.
Yeah. With the 6. And then, I also took Coastal Carolina to on money line on that one. Cause that one seemed a little weird, but they're not a terrible team. They're fun. They're fun to watch.
I'll throw a few others out and we'll close this out. Auburn plus 7.5 versus A&M. I know that's in College Station, but I'm not impressed with A&M. Oklahoma, this is not only his Big 12 debuts at Cincinnati. Nippert Stadium will be crazy, I'm sure, and all 34,000 people there. But Oklahoma just favored by 14.5. I think they could do that. BYU, I wonder if Vegas Jair is still listening. He suggested to take BYU versus Arkansas last week. I trailed him on that, and sure enough, they actually won outright versus Arkansas. Yep.
Actually, he won me. He won me my biggest chunk of change last week. I took Vegas Jared's advice. I actually put about like 4 units on it for me, as you like to refer to it, Dave, of what I normally bet on a game. I did it like 4 times, and I said Jared's going to win. And Jared's actually what got me back over even on the weekend and put me way ahead.
You win some and you lose some.
And I won that one. Let me tell you, that was a good one to win. So
I believe that Vegas Jared also thought Michigan State would cover the 16.5 versus Washington, which
I didn't even.
Well, they did for about 5 minutes or so. Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. So anyway, BYU +9 versus KU is an attractive number to me. And then Washington actually is -21. At home versus Cal. Right now the Huskies are rolling and look like a top 5 team. Keep them while they're hot. So,
and are they at Cal on that game?
Nope, that's at Washington.
It's at Washington. Okay, I was going to say, because Cal has looked pretty good at home so far this season. I've watched a couple of their games. They were kind of a team that I followed when I lived in the Bay Area. And that, you know, their home crowd is not always the greatest, but when they're good and Aaron Rodgers.
There's no one there, Rob.
When Aaron Rodgers.
Literally no one is there. I don't even make it up. It's an empty stadium.
It is.
They don't even know they're playing.
There's more people up on Tightwad Hill where you can watch the game for free than there are in the stadium.
That's right.
I think, yeah.
All right, Boomer, do you have anything else you want to add?
Trying to be positive, Dave.
No, I think he did well. So I think it's a good way to end it there with the.
All right. All right. Well, Rob, why don't you get us out with your first. Hold on. Like, I got to get the bumper going. There it is. Your first parting shot. Redcast Rob.
My first parting shot. I would just like to say that I am looking forward to a fun weekend coming up here. I'll probably talk about it next week as well. But I'm already making my plans to come out to Lincoln for the Michigan game here. I already got my Airbnb reserved. I already got my buddies. We're going to be making the road trip out from Greeley here. And one of them is a Michigan fan. I will admit that, but him and I planned this trip out together. We are sitting in the Michigan section and, we're really excited to come out for the game. He's really excited to hang out with a bunch of Husker fans and talk football in general. He's a really good guy. His name's Brent, and he is, he listens to the podcast, as a matter of fact. So, I appreciate that about him because he likes football. It's not just, Michigan. Football. So it'll be fun to be tailgating with those guys and coming out and spend some time with Honky, hopefully, and doing some fun shit.
All right. Boomer, what do you got?
Well, it's Husker football season's in full swing, but they also announced the Nebraska ball men's Big Ten schedule this week. So Husker basketball is not too far around the corner as well. So we'll be able to start adding that up to the Redcast. And in a nice bit of symmetry for the year, we open on the road at Minnesota on December 6th. So it should be hopefully a fun season and kind of looking forward to that. But what is it, about a month and a half or so till basketball season opens? So
yeah, that's
just around the corner, everybody.
It'll be mid-November or so. All right. And Honky, get us out of here.
I have my sister and brother-in-law coming down. They're going to use my tickets for the Northwestern game, October 21st. And so they were going to bring mom down for the weekend and everything. And found out today from Tyler Kai, and thank you, Rob. I know you were in contact with him. Tyler Kai, the money that we raised with the for my dad, which is in North Stadium, there's some kind of commemorative thing. I don't know what it looks like yet. I'm not sure what it is. But whatever it is that they got, we're going to find out what that is on October 20th. And so we'll have like a little ceremony or something. But Tyler's going to have my mom, and I'll have my sister and brother-in-law. And I think Kathy might try to get off work for it too. And we'll have a little ceremony there the day before the game. And I might go to the training table with them on that Friday for lunch. So that'll be really cool. Thankful to everybody, all the Redcasters, everyone that contributed to that. We were able to our family donated as well. And we were able to give a nice little chunk to the athletic department and in dad's honor and dad's name. So means a lot. Thank you very much.
That's awesome, Honk. It's great to hear. And it'll be really cool to see that whenever we visit the stadium. All right, guys. Looks like the fans enjoyed the show. I enjoyed it as well, despite Rob sometimes. For now, let's call that a Go Big Red cast.
Go Big Red.
GBR.
a Herd At Sports Network production.